We're back. We got a great episode. I think we have a great episode for us. We'll see. Hopefully we don't get canceled this time. But you know, there's a lot of things that are going on, you know. There's a lot of great things. He yells, "Have it all," as the thoughts come for his dick. It's Mr. Rob Fortune.
Thank you for that introduction. Now I'd like to introduce this man. He took Mia Khalifa, Sasha Gray, and Lena Rhodes and put them one on top of the other. They were stacked porno actors. It's Jomo.
Alrighty. Fucking good to hear you. Good to see you all, gentlemen. Thank you for that, Mr. Rob Fortune. That felt good. Yep. Might have to get rid of porn too out of the life as well. You know, we don't need that shit beating down on me. But I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Rob Fortune. All right. We're going to the next intro. The truth is his breakout is herpes. It's not eczema. It's Mr. Jack Falcon.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
How's it going?
So, Jomo, can you turn up a bit? Are you able to turn your mic up?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but...
What am I doing wrong?
Nothing. I could just hear Rob way louder than you. Anyway.
All right. God damn.
So today is the first episode ever where we're talking about a record that we've already talked about in the past.
Yeah. What about it?
Nothing. I'm happy that we're doing it again. So we're talking about Jomo picked them. Jomo, tell us about them. Why'd you pick the Foo Fighters?
There's a lot of reasons why. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, there was something funky going on with my settings. But why did I choose Foo Fighters? You're asking. Mm-hmm. You know what? I like the music, but Dave Grohl's face bothers me. It's just like he's got a
like young Dave Grohl's face or old Dave Grohl's face, because they're kind of like different.
Young Dave Grohl's face looks like fucking like Jeffrey Dahmer's accomplice. It's not good.
Yeah. He does look weird when he's younger. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But the music though is just it's enduring, man. It's good music. It's something that I enjoy listening to. I never had any bad vibes from listening to fucking Foo Fighters, Nirvana, any fucking song that Dave Grohl is pretty much part of is, you know, it's going to be good, man. So that's why I got a lot of respect for the guy. He's made himself into a great band. Why did I choose to do an album we did before again? Because fuck you, Jack Falcon. That's why.
I know. Also, you forgot the most important thing. Dave Grohl never got canceled.
You know, even with the rape charges, yeah, never got canceled. Bro, he never
got rape charges. Get out of here.
No. Hey, so we're going to pretend like I didn't say that. We're going to go to In the News. All right. Sad to say this, but Matthew Perry from Friends, who played Chandler Bing, passed away at the age of 54. I'm not going to lie to you. I totally saw this coming. All right, that was dark, and World War III is going to take place. Next thing you know, we're going to have 150 million men in America going to identify as females, and that's how we lose the war.
Nice. Does the draft work that way?
That's how it works, man. Just
it's, you know, it's gender, not sex.
It's something. It's something. But I see a lot of people trying to get out of war, so it is what it is. I don't blame them. I don't blame them. Like, I wouldn't want to fight for the military-industrial complex. Who wants to do that?
Yeah. What else was I going to say? You made a joke about something. I was going to say, oh, Matthew Perry. Did you watch Friends? Were you a fan of the show or not?
I fucking do not. Like, my wife is obsessed with it. I do not. There's like one or two moments it has for me that are, oh, that's kind of funny. But my humor is just fucking dark and depressing and
right
self-deprecating. I love all that shit. I don't I don't like it.
I'm surprised how many people love that show still. Anyway, does anyone want to talk about anything else before we start? All right, so we're talking about Foo Fighters today. There's pretty much five members of the band. Okay, we are not talking about their debut album. We're starting in 97 from The Color and the Shape, which is their second CD. So the first album was like completely written and recorded by Dave Grohl. I believe he did everything. Then you have The Color and the Shape, where he got Nate Mendel to play bass, and then Pat Smear played guitar on that album. And Pat Smear had played with Nirvana previously. I don't remember what actual recording, what songs he recorded on, like in the studio with them. But he did play on, if you ever watch the Unplugged live album, he is like in there with them playing. So he plays on it. And then there are three piece at that point. And then at some point, Taylor Hawkins comes in, who plays drums. And then Chris Shiflett comes in, who plays guitar. And then Pat Smear leaves, and then Pat Smear comes back. So like, it's a kind of like a, I don't know, musical chairs right now of members, but this is pretty much the core band of the Foo Fighters. All right, let me drop this artwork in and we will begin. The Color and the Shape is a 13-track record released in 1997, coming in just under 47 minutes long. It's the band's second studio album, reaching number 10 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. It contains the singles Monkey Wrench, Everlong, and My Hero. The Color and the Shape marked the official debut of the Foo Fighters as a band, as the 1995 debut album was primarily recorded by Dave Grohl and producer Barrett Jones as a demo. After the debut became an international success, Grohl recruited guitarist Pat Smear, bassist Nate Mendel, and drummer William Goldsmith to form the band's full lineup. The group convened in the fall of 1996 for pre-production on a second album and strived to create a full-fledged rock record, contrary to music press predictions that it would be another grunge offshoot. Primarily inspired by Grohl's divorce from photographer Jennifer Youngblood in 1996, recorded over the period of 2 months, The Color and the Shape is more lyrically introspective and musically developed than the Foo Fighters' debut. The album's track listing was designed to resemble a therapy session, splitting in between up-tempo tracks and ballads to reflect conflicting emotions. Early sessions at the Bear Creek Studios in Washington went poorly, and the band discarded most of those recordings. They regrouped without Goldsmith in early 1997 to record in Hollywood, with Grohl sitting in on drums instead. Goldsmith was offended and disgruntled that most of his material had been re-recorded, and he left the band shortly afterwards. Just as recording was finished and Taylor Hawkins was hired as the new drummer, Smear expressed his own plans to leave the band, claiming that he was exhausted and not motivated to go through with another extended tour. Smear departed during a September 4th concert at Radio City Music Hall, giving his instrument to the new guitarist, Franz Stahl, to finish the set. The album's title came from the band's tour manager at the time, who would often spend afternoons rummaging through thrift stores and purchasing strange memorabilia. On one occasion, he purchased a bowling pin with red and white stripes, remarking to the band that he rather liked the color and the shape of the object. The Japanese release includes the bonus track Dear Lover. At 1997's 40th Annual Grammy Awards, Monkey Wrench was nominated for Best Hard Rock Performance, but lost to whom, Jomo?
What year?
In 1997.
I'm going to say Yanni.
You got it, bro. They lost to the Smashing Pumpkins, but the end is the beginning is the end.
Ugh.
The Color and the Shape was nominated for Best Rock Album, but lost to whom, Jomo?
Can we just stop? I don't want to do this. Like, I hate guessing this shit because you put me on the spot, and every week.
I know. And this one you won't even get anyway. They lost to John Fogerty with Blue Moon Swamp. The Color and the Shape has been certified 2x platinum. Rob, what do you think of this album?
So when we did Nickelback, I was like, okay, here's a band who can fucking record to a metronome. They're professional, but everyone fucking hates Nickelback, me included. Now, the Foo Fighters is a band that, like, I don't know anybody that's passionate about the Foo Fighters, but I also have, like, the most kind things I've heard about the Foo Fighters is what Jomo just said, like, 5 minutes ago. Like, I know a lot of people who like a couple of their songs. I'm glad that we did this episode because it turns out I like the Foo Fighters more than I thought, and that there's more here, but like, this is a band that like I would never dare talk shit about because like, you know, I love Nirvana. Fucking everyone loves Nirvana. Like, what a revolutionary band. Dave Grohl fucking hit the drums really hard and did a good job on that. And then that drummer goes on to, like, sing and play guitar in this band. And you can't really say anything bad about his singing or his guitar playing. It's all competent and good and doesn't have the cringe White Knight moments that Nickelback has, you know? So it's just like, what bad thing do you say about this band? I mean, like... I'm gonna, you know, my criticism of this band in general was like, there's a sameness and there's a certain, like, you know, dynamic flatness. It's just like, you got a punk energy that goes on, without stop, for fucking 50 minutes or whatever. So there's a couple of albums we're going to talk about that I'm like, my comment is basically going to be, it started out good and then I lost interest fast. Okay. You know, even so, I'm not fucking hating on those albums. It's just like, but yeah, 1997 Color and the Shape. I think this album is quite good. I think this is their best album of the ones I listened to. I think that there's like more vocal contrast. Like, you know, he has quiet singing, he has loud singing, which he does both of them great. And I think the contrast like livens it up, makes me feel like engaged, not bored. You know, it's kind of the opposite of what I was just complaining about. So it starts with Dull, like the instrumentation is cool. It's like you got quiet, like 90s riffs. And like one thing that they did really good in the 90s, and this song in particular, it's like you got a guitar doing a certain thing, and then you got bass that kind of like rises above it. It kind of like does something outside of just the roots, you know, kind of the opposite of this thing that I'm used to, where it's just all guitar and then the bass is like felt but not heard. So yeah, I like that. And then Monkey Wrench, I like, that's a hit on the album. And, yeah, again, like back to like Nirvana, you know, it's like, you know, you got a fucking Nevermind, which is like, that's a punk album, but it's kind of pop. And it's like, it's a fucking slick album for how punk it is. But then In Utero is like a dirty fucking album with like weird chords and like, yeah, so like Monkey Wrench has a little bit of that, like this is a pop punk song, but there's also like changes into minor and like yeah, so there's cool stuff. And then my favorite moment in Monkey Wrench is the vocal harmonies at the end. It's like I wish that there was more of this, because Dave Grohl's a good singer, and I think like one of my fucking passions about music is guitar harmonies and vocal harmonies. I think that's such a way to add depth. And I think a lot of bands do like too much in the like the length department and not enough in the depth department. So like End of Monkey Wrench, the fucking vocal harmonies, I'm like, I'm fucking in. And why don't you do more of this? Anyways, yeah. Hey Johnny Park, you know, you got like cool distortion on off stuff, which is like, you know, the 90s. One of my favorite fucking thing is the variety in the guitar tones, and then call and response type vocals. My Poor Brain has a cool instrumental fade in and so on. My Hero is one of my favorite fucking Foo Fighters songs. Great instrumentals. Major Key Bliss, fucking A+. February Stars, I get Sebado vibes. Sebado is like a local 90s band. I don't know how big Sebado is. I think they were also in Dinosaur Jr. And I think Dinosaur Jr. was like less famous than Smashing Pumpkins, less famous than Nirvana. But like, you know, Sebado's are like a legit 90s band, you know, so February Stars has Sebado vibes, quiet, loud, the vocals aren't constant. Like, one of the my complaints about Foo Fighters is just like kind of like this feeling that the fucking vocals are just fucking I need a little bit of a break sometimes, so like February Stars does the vocals right, I would say. The instruments breathe, and then Everlong, I love this song. One of my old bands used to cover this song, and I've heard fucking Rick Astley cover this song. It's a big fucking hit. It has almost a billion plays on Spotify, so that's like almost November Rain type numbers. Yeah, this is a fucking good album. I think it's their number one. That's it.
Yeah, this is objectively probably the best Foo Fighters album. The recording quality on it is really good as well. This is a classic banger album. But okay, when we talk about people who, you were saying you don't know many people who like the Foo Fighters. I've run into quite a few people in like playing lately in bands who, like, there's one band we played with, like a hardcore show, and the singer of like a hardcore band had a Foo Fighters tattoo. This guy who I used to play in with one of the bands that I played in before, the one I'm playing in now, he fucking loves this album specifically. And he, so like when people jerk off to like the Blue Album by Weezer, they also seem to be jerking off to this album by the Foo Fighters, which is good. This record is awesome. One thing I want to make clear, because I'm going to also, I'm not going to be mean, but yeah, there, I'm going to be real about the way I feel about the Foo Fighters. And like, I do love Dave Grohl. I have immense respect for him. I was obsessed with the Foo Fighters back in the day, back in like the late 90s, which I'll talk about that a little later. But yeah, this record is fucking great. So this has some of their biggest hits, right? Monkey Wrench, Banger. There's like a vocal rant at the end of that I love. And like, I can't picture the song without it. My Hero. So when I was listening to that today, I was like, okay, yeah, this got to be the biggest Foo Fighters hit. But then I remembered Everlong, I'm pretty sure, is even bigger hit than like My Hero. So three of the songs off here are three of the biggest hits of this band's entire fucking career. And those people who like love those people I was talking about who like love the Blue Album and love this record, like they'll yap about it for fucking ever. They'll talk about different like distortions that are used in different parts. They'll deconstruct every fucking song. So I have met some people who really, really do love this record, and it's good. My only complaint or my only thing, like I understand now of doing the research on the record that like Dahl is first because they're trying to make the whole thing dynamic and put emotions everywhere. But it's like, when you hear Monkey Wrench, I'm just like, yo, you got to start the record off with Monkey Wrench. Fuck Dahl. Put it somewhere else in the mix. But they did it to get whatever feel that they wanted. And yeah, like this record is solid. And like the Foo Fighters were kind of on rocky ground earlier. Like they said that the first album was a demo and then like it randomly became like a hit. I don't see how something like that happens. Like it was meant to be an album and like released. But this one is like where that one is like, things could have gone one of many ways, even though some people will tell you that that's the best Foo Fighters record. And when I looked up like albums ranked by the Foo Fighters, a bunch of people put the debut as number one. But anyway, this record is the one that like solidified them to be able to kind of start doing whatever they wanted, because yeah, the talent is here. Dave Mustaine, Dave Grohl went from a drummer who would do maybe some singing every now and then to straight up, you know, every fucking instrument, and then becoming, yeah, he's a great singer. I've no gripes about his, any of the instrumentation that he does. Jomo, what do you think of this record?
Oh, well, this is the iconic record that the Foo Fighters put out, man. Like, The Color and the Shape is their quintessential fucking album. There are too many bangers on this fucking shit, man. If music could be a gangbang, The Color and the Shape would be Sasha Grey getting pulverized by 7 men at one time, okay? And I'm going to dive in a little bit deeper into that, if you will. Monkey Wrench is a fucking fun to listen to song, man. It's just, it's too fun to listen to. I just love it. Love the energy. I thought it was fucking great. And this isn't in a bad way, but towards, you know, they're obviously not going to play at 100 miles an hour all the time, but I think that they do soften up in the middle of the album, and then they have some back and forth classics like My Hero. I think that's a great song, but it's not my favorite of the fucking album. I love Enough Space. The bass and the buildup, it's got that hard rock feel that is like heroin to my ears, bro. Like, it's really fucking good. And I talk more about vibes and like the way fucking kids who get like fucking gender studies degrees talk, but it is what it is. The album is complete. There's great songs on here. There's highs, there's lows. And this is peak to me, Dave Grohl fucking talent, man. The guy is, he whatever he touches turns to rhodium, you know. It's not gold, but it's good, you know. And 9.5 out of 10 for the week. The dude fucks. He's got a big veiny dick.
Nice. Yeah, somebody left a comment on Enough Space. It says, I love when the song actually has audible bass, which that song does. February Stars bangs on this album. I'm giving that song eternal banger status, actually. There's a song, Up in Arms, that I love. It's like 2 minutes long, and it does so much shit that songs that are like 7 minutes long don't do. It starts off with this like slower intro, then it stops. You get this drum fill. Then it speeds the tempo up. There's like a guitar solo in there. There's multiple choruses. I don't know. There's tons of crazy shit. Also, the beginning drums and Up in Arms were from the original drummer, not Dave Grohl. So it's like if you listen to Nevermind, and there's one cymbal hit on Polly that wasn't Dave Grohl. This is like this album's version of that. Hey Johnny Park's a banger. Yeah, like, I don't know, this album is awesome. Walking After You, like, always get, like, if I listen to that song even once, it gets stuck in my head like all day long. So yeah, in Enough Space also, not only does the bass like kick ass in there, it's very possibly like the heaviest song on this album. So these guys can go hard. But yeah, this record is really good, and just like, they're just Dave, yeah, you're right. I don't know, Dave Grohl, like, everything that he touches is awesome. He has worked with Tenacious D on all of their albums. He did the Songs for the Deaf with Queens of the Stone Age. He's done a billion fucking things. And yeah, this is a great example of him starting to hone his actual, like, well, not even hone. I mean, at this point, he's writing like international, you know, eternal banger songs that are going to get a billion views. So yeah, he does a great job. There's one song on here, My Poor Brain, that when I listen to the chorus of that, I do hear Nirvana. So I don't know if that had been written before or what, but yeah, I don't know. It's a banger record. You can't really say, it's like a 5-star album. There's nothing really bad you can say about it. Is there anything else anyone wants to say about this before we read some comments?
Drama.
All right. First one, on a binge of every Foo album at work today. Next one says, I remember buying this on tape in California when I was on vacation. Up in Arms and February Stars still rock my world. Next one says, sorry, William Goldsmith, but this album is proof that the drumming needed to be re-recorded. Dave is on another level as a drummer. Next comment, Foo Fighters saved rock and roll. And lastly, second best album by them. First for me is One by One. Yeah, it's a banger. It's legendary. It'll never die. All right, let's move on. There's Nothing Left to Lose is an 11-track record released in 1999, coming just over 46 minutes long. It's the band's third studio album, reaching number 10 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart, and contains the singles Learn to Fly, Stacked at Actors, Generator, Breakout, and Next Year. There's Nothing Left to Lose marked the first appearance of drummer Taylor Hawkins and is often seen as a departure from the band's previous work, showcasing a softer, more experimental sound. Dave Grohl has stated that the album was totally based on melody and that it might be his favorite that they've ever done. It was recorded using only three musicians, Grohl, Hawkins, and bassist Nate Mendel. Prior to recording, guitarist Franz Stahl was fired as Grohl felt that the guitarist had not found his place in the band. At that point, it was decided that they would just be a three-piece for the record. Having just slaved themselves in the studio, making the color and the shape and losing two band members in the process, he decided to buy a house in Alexandria, Virginia, and make the record in its basement without any record company presence during the production, which was helped by the Foo Fighters leaving Capitol Records. The home facility was named Studio 606. The biggest challenge, according to Grohl, was making the record sound good without computer programs such as Pro Tools or Auto-Tune. The title emerged to Grohl as he talked to a friend about when you experience these emotions that you've been through a long and difficult period and you finally give in to the feeling that, quite simply, there's nothing left to lose, it can seem positive, desperate, and reckless. Grohl also said that it represented the band's mood during production. We just wrote off and played like all bets were off, and no one was forcing us to be there, so it had to be fun, and the songs had to be the best we could possibly come up with at the time. The cover art features the band's initials on the back of, tattooed on the back of Dave Grohl's neck. At 2000's 43rd Annual Grammy Awards, There's Nothing Left to Lose won Best Rock Album, Learn to Fly won Best Short Form Music Video, and Learn to Fly was nominated for Best Rock Performance by a duo or group with vocal, but lost to U2 with Beautiful Day. The only band to make an album, give it to people for free, and people like were like, get this shit off my iPod. There's Nothing Left to Lose has been certified platinum. Jomo, what do you think of There's Nothing Left to Lose?
Dude, okay. It's not as good as The Color and the Shape, but it's still a great fucking album. Stacked Actors to me is like a off fucking song, but it's not a terrible opener, man. I prefer Breakout. As an opener, that would have been, if I was like opening up this album and then shoving it in the CD player while, you know, wearing my Janko jeans and eating Doritos, like, this would have been the album that would have been that song Breakout, excuse me, would have been the best song to start the album on because of how heavy it is. And it feels like it's keeping you hooked into the record and wanting more and hoping that there's more songs that are similar to Breakout. And this, you know, a shitty opinion, just like my asshole, you know, it's pretty shitty. I watched Breakout and Learn to Fly, those videos. They're like Dave Grohl. Side note, the dude is fucking just a cheesy man. Like, he's just into like this dad comedy, and it's not bad, but you could definitely tell that Dave Grohl is a goofy dude in real life. And it's typical to slow down towards the end of the record. I feel like Foo Fighters like to mix up a lot of different things, whether it be a slow song, an acoustic, whatever, maybe, you know, just try something different, something experimental, but they still stick true to that whole, like, the rock, like what you think about like a lasting rock band. This is like, this could be, and I think my wife said this to me, was like, the Foo Fighters is the last big rock band of our era, and there's just really nothing that's there that's left. And I totally agree, because there's just different genres and subgenres just coming out, and you're not going to have the Foo Fighters like you did, you know, like you had, like they're the Rolling Stones of our era, if the Rolling Stones weren't jaded and coked the fuck up all the time. All right. I felt like they could have shortened out the album, but there's a lot of great bangers on this. 7.8 out of 10. Great energy overall. This album keeps the Foo Fighters relevant.
Yeah, no, I could actually see Breakout and Stack Dead Actors being switched in the track list. Yeah. So, okay, yeah, Learn to Fly. Or if you haven't seen that video in a while, you have to watch it. It's so fucking funny still. It has the Tenacious D guys, Jack Black and Rage Cage. And it's like the three of them, the three of the people in the Foo Fighters play like almost all the characters in the video, and they're on a plane, and then eventually everyone on the plane is on drugs because the Tenacious D guys put cocaine or whatever in the coffee, and everyone drank it except for them, so they have to land the plane. It's so good. It's so funny. Like, when I saw that it won a Grammy for like best short form music video, it's like, yeah, I don't see how anything else was beating that. So this album has five singles on it, but I could easily see them having gotten away with five more. This record is really catchy. It's fun. So I've talked about, this is the one that we had talked about previously. This is when the first concert I ever went to was the Foo Fighters, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Muse in 1999. Oh, and this was the record that was out at the time. I used to listen to this album all the time. I'm a huge fan of it. So like with nostalgia and everything, this is, I don't know. It's like, even though I'm saying that the Color and the Shape is like objectively the best album, this is the one that I'm always drawn to because I love this record so much, and a lot of that is like due to nostalgia and like listening to it all the time. But yeah, I mean, you got other bangers on here. Aurora, which wasn't a single but is an awesome song. Taylor Hawkins said that's his favorite Foo Fighter song. Not surprising. One I had brought up before was Headwires. This is a song that I always loved from this album. And there's a comment on that song that says, if you listen to any one Foo Fighters song enough times, you'll realize that it's the greatest song ever written. So yeah, again, like these dudes have a very big following. But yeah, every song is great on this album. Again, it's light. It doesn't bog you down. And the recording quality is great. I think that the Color and the Shape sounds better than this album, but it's still good. And I'll talk about some more stuff in a minute. But Rob, what do you think of this record?
So my favorite tracks are Aurora, track 6, and the last four. That's Next Year, Headwires, Ain't It the Life, and MIA. Yeah, Aurora has a cool buildup from quiet into a loud part, like with a lot of drum fills. And that's like, to me, that was like something. Okay, sometimes too much is just right. You know, it's like, I don't know how else to explain it, but like you go from like a starvation like thing to like like this moment that you overplay in order to exaggerate the emotion or intensity or whatever of it. Yeah, that Aurora really does that. I fucking feel that part. Every fucking overplaying drum fill, fucking perfect. And yeah, and then the last four, yeah, like Next Year is a song that has some Sebado vibes, like the quiet, clean tone to like, and then having the bass guitar like do some outside of the root shit on top of it. Like, I fucking love that shit. But there's a transition there that I do a double take at. To me, this is like my gripe with the Foo Fighters in general. But it's just like, there's this one transition that was fine, but it was bland, lackluster, monotone. It was, I expected something to like kind of differentiate the transition there, but you know, whatever. It's just, but yeah, I like that second part of the album. There's more like arpeggiation and guitar layering, and like there's a solo even. Yeah, if my gripe is too much constant vocals with no rest and too much just like strumming a distorted guitar with no rest, then like this second part is more like arpeggiation and layering and soloing and stuff like that. Soloing means a break from Dave's voice. Again, and so a point that I made, there's a Green Day song, fucking, I'm blanking on the name of it, but it might come to me in a second. Now, there's this one fucking part in a 2004 Green Day song where the vocalist, the voice. Okay, now remember, I'm using the word voice as a musical term. Like there's like one person's voice. Okay, you got a clean tone guitar, and then you take the same guitar and you add distortion to it. That is a new voice. Like those two, if they're overlapped that way, they're not really gonna feel like one thing, even if they are one thing. It sounds like a new thing coming in, so it kind of grabs your attention in a different way. But oh shit, I lost my train of thought. Where is I going with this voice thing? Oh yeah, okay, yeah. So this Green Day song, there's this 200 IQ songwriting thing where the human singer does a part 7 times, and then on the 8th time, he does the melody that you expect the human voice to do. He does it on a clean tone guitar instead. And that's just enough rest so that when it goes back into the verse and the human starts singing again, it's like that was just enough to break up the monotony so that, like, you know, it rested the fucking thing. If all that was the dude's voice, it would have been just, A, you couldn't have played it live, but I don't think that's the reason that they did it. I think that 1 second of rest, like, recharged you. And so, like, if I were to like address my complaint about the Foo Fighters, it's like, it's awesome, but you got to break it up a little bit, replace the voices with some guitar minis or a solo or fucking something. But yeah, this album is quite good. My favorite tracks are Aurora and The Last Four. That's it.
Yeah, I think we're going to get more guitar. So Dave Grohl is going to, he plays into what he is good at, and like, he's not a lead guitar player. So for this just being like core three, when they pull in Chris Shiflett later, who actually is a lead guitar player, we're going to start getting like more solos and stuff. Mm-hmm. So Stacked at Actors starts this album off, banger song. That song is about Courtney Love, right? And it's funny that like, So Chris Novoselic is like completely out of the game. He went to do like politics or whatever. So he actually does do, I believe, vocals, some guest appearance on a Foo Fighters album, but for the most part, he's out of music. He's given it up. He's done other things. So the two bigger people you have in music who were surrounding, you know, Nirvana at the time was Courtney Love and Dave Grohl. And like, everybody loves Dave Grohl and everyone on earth fucking hates Courtney Love. So it's funny that, like, I don't know. To me, it's like Dave Grohl, not like he even compares himself, because, like, you know, they don't talk. They have, with the exception of there being some court bullshit that has to do with Nirvana, those two are probably never crossing paths anymore. But that song is about her, and it's funny that he can poke at her because she fucking deserves it and she's a bitch and like nobody likes her. It's like, you have to try to literally have nobody on earth fucking like you. Song after that, Breakout. Great song. Yeah, I think it's a good single. It represents this record well. Gimme Stitches has some cool guitar playing in it. Generator, brought this up last time, has a talkbox part that I don't actually hear anybody ever bring up. If you look up like best talkbox pieces, that's like not even there. But to me, when I hear it, it's like very iconic. Then again, I was listening to this record like all the fucking time back in the day, so maybe I just overplayed it unlike other people. But nobody really brings it up, but it does have a really cool, unique talkbox part in it. And then the last song on this album is MIA, and it's just as great as it's always been. So yeah, it's good to go back to this record every now and then. I used to listen to it all the time, and I'm a lifelong fan of this record. So it's nice to hear it pop up. Is there anything else anyone wants to say before we hear some comments?
Next.
All right, first comment. Dave Grohl says this is their best album. Might have to agree with him. Next comment. Aurora has to be one of the best songs in their entire discography. It's just perfect. Next comment. I just love the chill, dreamy, summery vibe of this record. Next one says their best album. I would even say by far. And lastly, the reason I got into their music when I was a kid. Yep. Yeah, I think a lot of people got into it probably around this. Maybe I'm going to guess that when most people got into the Foo Fighters, it's probably around the Color and the Shape, or the like, for people who are from this era, Color and the Shape and the There's Nothing Left to Lose. We ready to move on? Does anyone need to use the bathroom?
You can move on.
Why are you gay?
Why are you gay? All right, One by One is an 11-track record released in 2002, coming just over 55 minutes long. It's the band's fourth studio album, reaching number 3 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart, and contains the singles All My Life, Times Like These, Low, and Have It All. Production on One by One was troubled, with initial recording sessions considered unsatisfying and raising tensions between the band members. They eventually decided to redo the album from scratch during a two-week period at Grohl's home studio in Virginia. The album has been noted for its introspective lyrics and heavier, more aggressive sound compared to the band's earlier work, which Grohl has said was intended to translate the energy of the Foo Fighters' live performance onto a recording. It was the first album recorded with Chris Shiflett as part of the band, and the first in which Grohl did not play any drums. Dave Grohl began working on new material for the Foo's next album as early as 2000 during their Nothing Left to Lose tour. Following the tour, the band started to compose songs for their next album in early 2001. In August, after performing in the V Festival, Hawkins suffered a heroin overdose that left him in a coma for 2 weeks.
Nice.
After taking time off to recover, during which Grohl accepted an offer to play drums for the Queens of the Stone Age on their 2002 album Songs for the Deaf, the band got together in October 2001 to continue composition. During November and December, they had been recording at Studio 606. The progress of the Virginia session started to become stale, so with six tracks finished, in January 2002, the band moved to Los Angeles for a change of scenery. 29 songs were recorded, including The One, featured in the film Orange County, and released as a standalone single. The sessions took 4 months and were at the cost of how much? How much money do you think that this cost for a four-month session in Los Angeles?
$100 million.
They were at the cost of $1 million. It was the first Foo Fighters album produced with Pro Tools and on which the band members have recorded separately. At 2002's 45th Annual Grammy Awards, All My Life won Best Hard Rock Performance but lost Best Rock Song to Bruce Springsteen with The Rising.
God,
at 2003's 46th Annual Grammy Awards, One by One won Best Rock Album, but Times Like These lost Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal to Warren Zevon and Bruce Springsteen with Disorder in the House. One by One has been certified platinum. So this is not my favorite overall record by them, but I think it's my favorite of the week due to the experience of listening to this album all the way through. I don't think I've heard more than just the singles off this since it's been around. At this point, this is 2002, so I don't know what I was listening to at the time. But one of the things is that I think Foo Fighters does a great job of bringing people into to rock and roll. But I'm not so sure they're the greatest with holding people like onto the band forever. I think it's more like a gateway thing for a lot of people. When I think of some of the bands that I've listened to that are, I don't know, somewhere in the middle of rock, not necessarily metal, but like somewhere like rock, punkier, things like that. A lot of them I prefer than the Foo Fighters, like as a whole. But this record is darker than a lot of their previous stuff, which I talked about before, and it's good and unique, if only for that. Like, that's what I want. When I think of the Foo Fighters, one of the problems that I have with the later stuff is that I want it to be something else, but it's not. Like, Dave Grohl's ideas for the band and my ideas for the band are two different things, and he's the one in the band, so that's the one that happens. People say the second half of this album is weak. They're not necessarily wrong. I'm not ready to give my full conclusion on it, because like at some points I'm like, yeah, they're right. But at some points I'm like, there's things that I do like quite a bit at the end of this record. I listened to this album quite a bit this week while playing video games, and I had a great time with it. So there's a line somewhere in the Foo Fighters discography, right, that is like the line where I stop caring about their music. And that's what I'm trying to find. I was trying to find like this week, where is that line where I'm like, okay, this is something that I'm not interested in versus, yeah, I'm down with this. And apparently everyone in the band hates this album. Apparently they liked it when it came out and they're like, no, that album sucks, and they don't play anything off of it. So the big bangers off here, like All My Life, I kept thinking the name of that song was One by One, but yeah, so All My Life, that's classic Foo Fighters song. One of my favorites on the album. If you watch the music video, Dave Grohl plays this clear guitar, and I've thought about, from when I saw the video 20 years ago, I've thought about that guitar regularly for whatever reason till now. Like, I still think about that guitar now. Another hit off this album was called Low. I don't remember really liking that song when it came out, but I like it quite a bit now. I think it's a good song. The music video is amazing. So you have this kind of clown music video for Learn to Fly, which is amazing. This is a video where it's not like it's supposed to be like funny as well. So it's Jack Black and it's Dave Grohl in like a hotel room with a handy cam filming each other getting drunk and joking around, and then they start like dressing up like women and then like humping each other, and then they start crying. It's fucking, it's ridiculous. It's amazing. If you haven't seen it, you have to go check it out. But yeah, so those are the songs like I'm down with. And then you have a song like Times Like These. It, like, that's where, okay, so Times Like These is a song that I know that their fans eat up, right? But that's the kind of stuff where I was like, that's what I don't want. So it's a good single because it's going to sell records for them. It's not my thing. I'm more of like, I want the All My Life and the Low stuff instead of like the Times Like These stuff. But I know that there's going to be people who say the exact opposite, that they want the Times Like These kind of songs. Rob, what do you think of this record?
So I put this album on a lot, but I don't know how much of this album I've listened to. I fucking love All My Life, like, and I have since the first time I heard it, like 20 years ago or whatever. I fucking love the beat of it. I love the dynamics of it. I love how, like, oh, you know, okay, you play the verse a certain amount of times, and then at a certain part, he's, like, adding ghost notes to it. One thing I fucking love is, like, let's call it character development. It's, like, you got a certain riff, but or like a certain verse, but like if you play the verses kind of differently, like dynamically differently, like it, there's this certain, it fucking evolves and it grows on you, and it like, yeah, there's that song has so many of those, and again, it has a certain in utero-ness to it where like this isn't like a regular a minor fucking scale. There's weird chords here. There's weird stuff that isn't regular pop punk or whatever. It's in like, yeah, this song has fucking balls, and I listened to it a fucking 150 times this week. I blasted it like driving through downtown Salem. I fucking love that song. And then yeah, Low, I kind of sort of love it. Kind of sort of reminds me of Queens of the Stone Age, like vocals, something in there, like yeah, but I get bored like somewhere around then, and then I'm fucking done. My load is blown on the first song. Now on some level, okay, how mean am I gonna be to somebody who wrote a song that's so fucking good I'll listen to it that many fucking times and jizz all over it? I mean, that's more than most of us write. So yeah, I'm giving this third place for the week. All My Life is a fucking banger and maybe my favorite Foo Fighters song. And I don't know, whatever. I turned off this record pretty quick. That's it.
So I reached that existential crisis between like how to like not be rude to someone who makes like great things, yeah, but at the same point I'm like, I don't know how to say like I we'll get to it. It's not on this album, yeah. It's on the next one, but yeah, I had this pulling at me a couple times. So songs in here that are good, like Disenchanted Lullaby, I like that song. It's like a slower dark song, and if vocally there's parts in that song that you wouldn't even tell it's Dave Grohl, so which I like. But I know that also it's like there are things I like on this record that it's like you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell that it's Foo Fighters. So it's like, does that mean that you actually like the Foo Fighters? Song Tired of You, like that's the stuff that I want. I like that this album is darker, you know, and they're leaning into it. Brian May apparently plays guitar somewhere on the song. There is a guitar line straight up ripped from the song Crab by Weezer. It was on the Green album. I sat here for like this morning when I was listening, bro, to it, I sat here for like 30 minutes. I was like, what fucking song is that line from? And it's from Crab, which is an awesome song. I think that album came out in what, like 2000, so a little before this. Not saying anyone stole it, but it's definitely the same fucking guitar line. Like Lonely As You, a good song. That song is not going to be a single, but it keeps the vibe going. And there's a song in here called Overdrive that if you listen to it, it sounds like a song from like an early Foo Fighters album. And it sticks out in the mix, but like, because it's not... It's like the rest of this stuff kind of feels like a complete thought. And then you have this song that it's like you almost don't recognize sometimes like how or you don't realize sometimes like how recognizable some of Dave Grohl's, not Dave Mustaine, Dave Grohl's writing is. And when you hear a song like Overdrive, it sounds like it could have been on the debut or The Color and the Shape. It's a good song. It sticks out because of that. Jomo, what do you think of this record?
I thought it was great. All My Life, I remember, well, let me start off by saying this. All My Life is that complete total package of an album opener, man. It is fucking just a great fucking song. I think that Dave Grohl did right by putting that in the beginning. And I remember waking up when I was a kid. I think this came out 2002, right? This song. I remember you know, waking up to work out just a little bit before school, and then MTV Dude playing in the background, and All My Life would come on, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good fucking song, man. That's there's something about that. This is when life was good, and I didn't know what taxes were, you know.
yeah.
now life is like a above ground pool. It's a pool, but it's it's not what I want. Life is good. Low is like the solid segue. It's got great energy. The instrumentals are fucking phenomenal. Can't help that Times Like These and Learn to Fly have like that similar instrumental vibe. It just seems like I may be retarded. It is what it is. Anyway, I think that a lot of the shit that Dave does is there's simplicity in his music. There's some good hooks to a lot of his stuff, but it's like there's a lot of recycling of riffs and motifs that make the music seem similar but just slightly different. I'm gonna have to grade this 7.852 out of 10. Good album, not my favorite.
That's quite a exact score. So yeah, like some of the songs. So I was saying, like Times Like, what's up?
There's no rhyme or reason behind it. It's just random.
Oh no shit! No shit! Mathematically, I couldn't tell you. We didn't actually come out to that number. So yes, okay. So I was saying, like Times Like These. I was saying, like, you know, it's a good single because people are going to eat it up. But I'm like, whatever. Okay, then you have a song like Halo. So when people say that the second half of this album is meh. Like that is like a song that they have to be referring to Halo. Like I've tried to like it, but I'm just like sitting here bored to tears. There's another song, Burn Away. The first note that I have is like yawn, right? So when Dave explores outside of the normal scope of his writing, sometimes like he hits it big and it's like, okay, yeah, this song is fucking awesome. And sometimes it just misses really hard. And in my opinion, like Burn Away, like that's one of the ones that's like missing really hard. But they say like you miss every shot that you don't take. This album ends with like an 8-minute long song called Comeback. And I'm trying to understand why the song is 8 minutes. Like, it's okay. It continues to make me like lose the song in places. I'm just like, but does this really need to be 8 minutes? Or is this like, okay, let's make the last song on here 8 minutes and make this big epic thing, even though it doesn't need to be that. Someone on earth is going to tell you that is the best Foo Fighter song ever written. And fair, maybe it is for you. But like I'm just saying, like when people say that the second half of this is meh, when I hear things like Comeback, it's like, I don't know. I just can't get into it. I try, and I've listened to it. I'm like, I don't know what to say about something like this. It's you're going to hear like those where Dave Grohl either vocally or whatever, like goes outside of just a normal thing. And again, like sometimes it's going to hit and sometimes it won't. But when I hear that, like, I don't mind playing games and just kind of like vibing out to it, but I would never be like, oh, come home from work and be like, yo, I'm going to put on Comeback and sit here and like listen to it. So yeah, this record is an oddball because it is heavy, but like they are like, yeah, we don't even like this album. But there's going to be people who tell you that this is their favorite record. So it's interesting to me. It was like my favorite to get into this week because the other two I had listened to quite a bit over the years. And the next one is one that I don't really care about. But so like this one was kind of that oddball to me where it's like there's something new to completely dive into and see what's there. So they shouldn't be embarrassed about this album. Yeah, sure. I mean, there's some stuff that maybe nobody that most of the people might not care about. But like you got two like big banger songs on here, or at least one huge banger song on here. But like Times Like These, I know that I believe when Taylor Hawkins died, when they did that 3-hour long like tribute concert, I could have sworn it was called Times Like These, or they did something with Times Like These. So that is, they kind of brought it back. But yeah, it's like when you look at some of the bangers from their other records and how they flow, especially like The Color and the Shape. So you were saying like they blew their load at the beginning, right? So you play All My Life, the load's blown, you hear Low, and then from there it's like, okay, I can move on to the next record. Whereas the other ones, it's like you got Monkey Wrench, right? You got Up in Arms, you got My Hero, February Stars, you got Everlong, and it's just like banger after banger after banger. And then it kind of keeps you involved the whole time instead of just blowing the load immediately and then watching everybody else get down. So yeah, anyway, I like it. I would listen to it again. It's not my favorite, but like it was my favorite of the week to kind of dive into. Read some YouTube comments. First one says, man, this album starts out fire. First 5 tracks are good. The first 2 are some of the best the band has to offer, and then the rest are meh. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Next one says, the only Foo Fighters song where every song is a Foo Fighters album where every song is a banger. That's what I'm saying. It's like there's one person in one corner. This dude's like, every song here is the best thing the Foo Fighters ever made. Someone else is like, yeah, first two songs like fuck really hard and the rest of the album's forgettable. So yeah, it's all up to people. People are crazy. Like, well, not people, but like humans, how like someone could absolutely love something and someone could like kind of hate something. It's crazy. Next one says Golden Era. Next comment, Low is pure gold. And lastly, worst second half of an album ever. So there you go. I think this is pretty split between people. Is there anything else anyone wants to say about this record? Did I already ask that?
Next.
Echo Silence, Patience and Grace is a 12-track record released in 2007, coming just over 51 minutes long. It's the band's sixth studio album, reaching number 3 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. It contains the singles The Pretender, Long Road to Ruin, Cheer Up Boys, Your Makeup is Running, and Let It Die. Echo Silence, Patience and Grace is noted for a blend of regular rock and acoustic tracks with shifting dynamics, which emerge from a variety of styles employed on the demos the band produced. It also marks the second time the band worked with producer Gil Norton, whom Dave Grohl brought in to fully explore the potential of his compositions and have a record that sounded different from their previous work. Grohl tried to focus on songs with messages that resonated with his audience, writing reflective lyrics that drew inspiration from the birth of his daughter. Since Grohl felt the songs were different from the band's previous input, he said it had the potential to be something great. He considered that instead of doing something like the last three albums, they had to go out of their own comfort zone and needed someone to push us out of there. So Grohl decided to work again with Gil Norton, who produced the band's second album, The Color and the Shape, citing how Norton taught them the importance of pre-production and refining the composition, and claiming Norton's unconventional approach seems to capture the best of this band. Echoes features the Foo Fighters' first instrumental, Ballad of the Beaconsfield Miners. It was written by Grohl after meeting one of the miners involved in the Beaconsville mine collapse, who requested an iPod with In Your Honor on it during the incident. As Grohl was moved by this action, he decided to write something just to dedicate to him that night, because he definitely seemed like a hero, and later promised to include the instrumental on the album. The cover art was made by Invisible Creature, and features a combination between an aerial bomb and a vacuum tube to juxtapose the weapon with another object that traditionally wasn't associated with war or violence. The album's title comes from a lyric in the album's final song, Home. At 2007's 50th Annual Grammy Awards, The Pretender won Best Hard Rock Performance. Echo Silence, Patience and Grace won Best Rock Album. The Pretender was nominated for Record of the Year, but lost to Amy Winehouse with Rehab. And Echo Silence, Patience and Grace was nominated for Album of the Year, but lost to Herbie Hancock with River, the Joni Letters. Echo Silence, what? Patience and Grace has been certified platinum. Yo, the people they pit against each other for a fucking Grammy is ridiculous. Rob, what do you think of this album?
Okay, so a couple of jokes or whatever. Okay, so One by One cost $1 million. That's it's 1/31st of the price of Chinese Democracy. I think they did pretty good there.
Nice.
They made out.
Also, before the 2005 album In Your Honor, I like. I don't know if it's as good as I'm gonna say it's not as good as The Color and the Shape, but I like the first 3-4 songs on that album. I think In Your Honor is quite good. Back to the 2007 album, I'm gonna say that everything I've been complaining about so far is the worst on this album. I'm not saying it's a horrible album or anything. I'm just saying that like it was kind of a slog for me to get through. I kind of like felt bored, disinterested. And so instead of reviewing it line by line, I'm going to say some of the moments in which I became unannoyed because it like broke the monotony somehow. So in Come Alive, there's this moment where I get a break from the constant vocals. It breaks down to acoustic guitar and a neat bass line. It goes on for exactly one measure. Stranger things have happened. There's a guitar solo and the guitar pauses each measure. Like, you know, that adds a little bit of like, you know, variety, snaps me out of that fucking sameness. And then Summer's End, which is a highlight for me. I think I marked that song as one that I liked. There's a guitar solo. There's vocal harmonies, like a Queens of the Stone Age vibe. There's guitar variety, arpeggiation, volume and tone contrast. So I'm not saying I fucking hate those this album, but you know, Summer's End is my favorite. But yeah, a little too monotone, and like it's weird how fucking a band that has like energy and balls, if it's all energy and balls all the time without any like thing to break up the monotony, it loses all of its balls just by being fucking one fucking thing nonstop. So I got some complaints here. It's not a horrible album. It's just I'm never gonna listen to it again. That's it.
Yeah, I'm giving this record dead last for the week. Okay, so like I said, I'm looking for my line of like not caring about the Foo Fighters anymore, and it's somewhere right around this record. It could start with In Your Honor. You said it's a good record. We didn't listen to it this week, and I haven't heard it in fucking ages, and I didn't listen to it this week, so I don't know where, but it's somewhere around here. Now, fans love this album, and so I think that Dave Grohl understands his audience, but his audience has become someone who is not me, and I haven't been part of that audience in quite a while. This record starts off with the song The Pretender, which I think is a legit great song. Everybody knows it. It's another banger status song for the band. This is another one where the one of the issues is the problem is that the album starts off with like the biggest bang, and this one like works really well as a Foo Fighters song, but then like later on, like after that song, I'm kind of just like, I want more of that, right? And we're not really getting it. So Long Road to Ruin, when I hear the song, the test is, if we were blasting the song in our car and a car drove like up to a stoplight next to us and it's a bunch of hotties, right? Is everyone like, fuck yeah, or are we embarrassed? Mm. You know, are they just like, oh shit, and like we get embarrassed. So when I hear the song, I'm thinking I'm going to be embarrassed, right? And this is where I'm saying, it's like, there are times where and this is, you know, I'm not trying to like shit on Dave Grohl or whatever, but this is definitely a point where the song, I'm like, I would never blast this song willingly in my car. And like, I'm not really the biggest fan of the song, but I can see a lot of people, again, like being really big into it. However, the music video is so good and funny that I'm like pulled in like two ways, because at one point it's like I kind of want to hate on it, but then like I remember like how down to earth and like how these guys are like regular funny dudes. So it's like it's hard to hate on something like that. Plus like Dave Grohl's a fucking legend and he's always doing like whack shit. There's like a video online where you were saying that Rick Astley covered one of the songs, Everlong. They've played concerts where Rick Astley comes out and then they play whatever his Rick Roll song was. Nice. And they just Rick Roll the whole audience. Nice. And so like that shit's funny, right? Yeah. So I'm like torn, because it's like I don't really care about this song, but at the same point I watch the video and it's like I love these guys. These dudes are really fucking awesome and they're funny and they're cool and they're down to earth. Then there's the song Cheer Up Boys, Your Makeup Is Running. Which where this song falls, so this was also a single, and where it falls in the track list, I'm like, this is exactly what I needed. I got to get the blood pumping. I love that song. Top three on the record. No brainer single. I can listen to it over and over and over again. Then we get the song for like the Beaconsfield Miners, right? Which is an instrumental. And I love the story behind it. It's a cool one. Like not what happened, but the fact that like the thing that helped get them through being in this shitty situation of like claustrophobia and possibly fucking dying was that they're like, oh, I have an iPod with some Foo Fighters music on it. And that's kind of like bringing me to a chill place where I'm able to like mentally, you know, get through this. Dave Grohl hears about it, writes a song for them, puts it on the album. It's like very nice. And that's what I'm saying. That ties back to this dude, Dave Grohl, being just a fucking nice guy. Dave Grohl is not in this for the money. He could probably have just retired right after Nirvana and just was like, fuck it, fuck bitches, pop champagne and do cocaine and live the life. He wanted the good life. Okay. The good life. He wanted to do more. Right. So he's a down to earth dude. He wrote the song for them. He put it on here. I completely admire it. That being said, I've heard the song one time and I never have to ever hear it again. It's it's fine for what it is. Every time I hear it, it's like, I just, if I make a mixed CD and it's this album, which it would never happen, but if it did in another parallel universe, I wouldn't even put it on there because I don't want to have to skip it every time. Jomo, what do you think of this record?
Okay, hear me out.
Oh God!
Is a chick
10 out of 10?
Hold on. Is a chick banging another chick with a strap on called the Pretender?
I wonder.
No, no, no. I'm just yeah. Okay. Anyway, I'm asking for a friend. Oh, fuck me.
I don't.
Dude, this album's solid. All right. And here's why: it didn't have anything that resembled My World by Guns N' Roses. Just that alone.
I'll give you that. That is true.
That alone solidified it for me. I was like, this is quite good. I could listen to this all day, twice on Sundays. The acoustic songs and ballads all hit the clit just right, dude. Ballad of Beaconsfield Miners.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that song, man. It made me want to yell, Sue-wee, buddy, hell yeah, brother. That's what it made me want to do, man. It made me.
Yeah, it's definitely deliverance-y.
A little rapey, but not too rapey, okay? just uncomfortable stares, harassment, not assault. Front to back, just like the way I wipe. There are no bad songs. there's no bad songs on this album, bro. Not a single one. I would say this is 7.963 out of 10 for the week. It's a solid album. Maybe even a close 8, if you will. A close 8. But dude, I can't get enough of it, man. Like, pretty much after this is where Foo Fighters do that taper of bullshit. And I'm mentally checked out after that. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, the song Stranger Things Have Happened, right? So that's a random ass song that I personally never heard of in the middle of a record that I've never actually heard anyone ever talk about. And that song on YouTube has 3.5 million views.
What?
Of course, it's catchy and everything. But like for that, like when we've listened to tons of albums, right? So normally when you get to, like this album is not obviously as famous as Nothing Left to Lose or The Color and the Shape. So like for a song in the middle that wasn't a single to have 4 fucking million views, it's like, yeah, people, like, again, I'm saying, like, they have a big fan base, right? It's a girthy, veiny fan base. Song Come Alive. So when I hear the song Come Alive, right? So it's like, with the amount of people who love this song, when I'm listening to this, it's like, I have to be missing something. Like, maybe I need to see this band play this shit live to fill in what I'm missing. But like, okay, comment on Come Alive. My favorite Foo Fighters song, the words have real meaning to any parent. So half of that comment I already don't care about. The first part of the comment, my favorite Foo Fighters song. Okay. Summer's End, right? This comment, my all-time favorite Foo Fighters song, Dave Grohl is a friggin' musical genius. Oh, and by the way, the amount of comments when you scroll through these songs that say masterpiece, genius, it's one of the most I've ever seen out of any of the bands that we've listened to. Let It Die, right? Okay, so I'm when I hear Let It Die, it's interesting to me that that's a single along with The Pretender because it fucking bores me to tears. Where when I hear The Pretender, I'm like, yo, this song is like legit great. Like, Let It Die is so cookie cutter of a song, it's like unreal to me. And then there's a comment on there like, still gives me goosebumps 15 years later, just an epic song. I was like, okay, whatever. I mean, we got to remember, like Jomo brought up, well, you brought up My World, which I don't know if I've ever seen anyone actually say they like that song, but we saw people say they like Chinese Democracy. So, the floodgates are open at that point. Song Erase Replace, right? Boring as shit. Like, even if you hate the album One by One, at least there's some personality there with like kind of dark, brooding, whatever. Right. But this record to me is like, it's like a plain bowl of oatmeal with like 2 blueberries put in it. So it's like, there's a couple, there's like 2 bites that are an event and the rest of it is like a slog to eat through. It's like a fucking bowl of porridge. There's a song in here called Statues that is so catchy and like that I legit thought it was a cover of a 70s song. It's an original, but they nailed the style of it. And then like, I would say if any song on these albums were to be like a legit hidden gem of a song on a Foo Fighters album, it's probably Statues. It's so good that I actually thought that it was a cover of some fucking big band from the 70s. And then last one I'm going to talk about is a song, But Honestly, that somebody said is their favorite song in this album. That's a song that works for me. So like, I'm up and down with this record. There's a bunch of stuff I don't care about. And in But Honestly, he does the Stars and Scars rhyme, which he does in February Stars. Not sure if that's intentionally meant to be like a throwback or, you know, you forget after 15 years and use the rhyme again. But yeah, it's a good song. I would never willingly listen to this album again all the way through. I would listen to The Pretender and like a couple other songs. And depending if anyone can hear me or no one's around, I might play Long Road to Ruin. But if there's any chance of anyone hearing me singing along to it, then I'm just going to pass on it. Does anyone else want to say anything about this record?
No.
Okay. Let's read some comments and we'll get out of here. First one, Statues used to not be my favorite, but it's grown on me so much. Next one says, what an album. Wow. Next comment, maybe the best. Oh, get ready for this. Maybe the best track one, track two since the Beatles White Album. Next one, go reevaluate your life. Yeah. Next one says, my favorite song of the Foo Fighters is, but honestly, there we go. That's the comment I was talking about. And lastly, these guys are fucking amazing. So, yep. I don't, there's a line in the sand that I don't want to cross, but on, but the other side of that, there's a whole bunch of people who are happy being there. Okay. Oh, if you want more Foo Fighters, their debut is, they have their debut self-titled in 1995, In Your Honor in 2005, Wasting Light in 2011, Sonic Highways in 2014, Concrete and Gold in 2017, Medicine at Midnight in 2021, and But Here We Are in 2023, which is the record that was a tribute to Taylor Hawkins, who died, I believe, in 2022. Yeah. Okay. Anything else anyone wants to say about anything before we get out of here?
No. I'm going to come.
I hate nice. Okay. I don't know. Is there anything that any band that people want to do next week? I got a list here we can go through. We can pick one if somebody wants.
Shoot it. Shoot it. Let's go.
All right. Here's the list. This is the same list from before. We got Fall Out Boy, Disturbed, Bush, Kid Rock, Sonic Youth, Godsmack, Motley Crue, Danzig, Iced Earth, Kiss, Dio, The Donnas, which would probably be boring, Lit, Korn we could do, Bowling for Soup. It's up to you guys. Anything there pop out to you?
I'm going to say either Motley Crue or Sonic Youth.
Ooh, I'm down for the Crue.
All right, let's do Motley Crue.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. All right, everybody.
All right. It was a pleasure. Right. Take care and try not to suck.